Hello, Vet Blast podcast listeners. Mark your calendars for Fetch Long Beach happening this December 6th through the 8th. Join us for 3 days of top-tier veterinarian continuing education, all while soaking in the California sunshine. At Fetch Long Beach, our attendees come first. That's why we offer personalized learning opportunities, complimentary meals, and a dedicated staff ready to support you every step of the way. So if you are looking for that perfect year-end CE opportunity, Fetch Long Beach is the place to be.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. Wildlife, veterinary medicine, photography, the list goes on with a wonderful colleague in our profession that is doing incredible stuff around the world. Say hello to Dr. Carl Palazzolo. Sorry, I was even practicing beforehand, but I love it. How are you, Dr. Carl?
Doing great, Adam. Just came back from an overseas trip, and I got two more planned for this year, polar bears and jaguars. So let's get to it.
Do you hear this, listeners? Did you hear what he just said? You know, meanwhile, I'm just like, oh, going downtown to get some groceries. This guy's going all over the world to say hi to polar bears. This is awesome. I love it. So a little bit of information about our friend here. Carl graduated from the veterinary school at Michigan State University in 1978. He practiced in Michigan for 2 years prior to moving to California in 1980. He worked at the Sunsurf Animal Hospital in Sunset Beach, California from 1980 to 85, and then relief work from 85 to 89. He received his MBA from Pepperdine in 1985, and he purchased the Long Beach Animal Hospital a few years later and sold it at the end of 2018. And he's been in private practice, get a load of this, listeners, for 46 years. Fantastic. And he's been teaching conservation medicine and wildlife digital photography since his first trip to Africa in 1986. So I'm sure all the listeners just want to know, first and foremost, like, what made you get started in wildlife and exotic animal medicine?
It actually started as a boy growing up watching TV, and it was one show that was instrumental. It's called Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, with a guy named Merlin Perkins. He was phenomenal. He's old geezer. He was a blast. He was way ahead of everybody of his time. And that whetted my appetite. Then I started watching the National Geographics. Back then, when I thought they were even better, a guy named Hugo von Lawick. He was Jane Goodall's husband. And he was the first guy to do all the cheetah photography in Africa. And he was so ahead of his time also, so good, it hooked me. Then I said, I want to work with animals, especially the exotic animals. So that's where it really started.
Yeah, phenomenal. And when, so you've taken so many overseas trips, which I want to know, but when did you take your first overseas wildlife trip?
Well, it wasn't for quite a while after that. It was getting into vet school, getting through vet school, starting a business, getting work going. But it was 1986. It was my first trip to Africa. Okay. My mother had taken my grandmother to Sicily to visit her sister. And on the way there, I said, I'll go see them, hang out for a week or so, and off to Africa. And I went to the East Africa, Tanzania and Kenya on my first safari. And after that, I said, I was hooked. Yeah, it's fantastic.
So when did you always know you want to be a veterinarian?
No, I was actually going to become an architect. I love architecture. I like design. That's why I just came back from the Louvre. I went over to Italy and all around France to see things. But it turns out that I'm better with animals and people than I am as a drawer and architect. I can visualize, like I can go out there and tune with wildlife. So it turned out actually a better decision for me too.
Okay.
When I went to Michigan State, I was actually going to go to a different university, become an architect. That changed for various funny reasons. They lost my drawings and my transcript, basically. I said, sorry, come back in the next semester, but you have to go someplace else. So go to Michigan State with all these strange boys who I didn't know from Adam, excuse my playing words there. Yeah. And they were wonderful. And I said, what's your major? Mine's pre-vet. I go, what is this pre-vet stuff? And the rest is history. I realized that was me.
Wow.
And then the vet medicine part opens up many, many doors in the wildlife conservation photography part of the world. Because when I go somewhere, the guys are used to, excuse my terminology, just regular Joe people, meaning they're here to sit in their thing. They don't realize the knowledge that I had. And because being a veterinarian, and I teach them, for example, they would say things like, do you know that antelope has four stomachs? I go, come here, we'll tell you about the four stomachs, okay? So the exchange of knowledge between the two of us, we did that male bonding thing, and we hit it off. And next thing, they let me do all kinds of interesting things that we normally do, and they tell me, just keep your mouth shut, we're going to take you someplace special. And that turned out to be like, whoa, I got to take advantage of this.
So
Yeah. really, the male body. So these guides are just awesome. I had guys in Borneo take me on canoe trips back in the backcountry. I've had guides take me with sedating the rhinos. I've had guys take me tracking lions that weren't supposed to do all that kind of stuff, all because they trusted me because I did what they said. But more importantly, I exchanged information with them. I taught them as much as I could. And that's the whole point of all this. When you travel internationally, you are basically an ambassador for the U.S. without credentials. It's how you treat people with respect.
Yeah.
You do, they pay back in kind threefold, and you make out like a bandit. You really do.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And while you were going through veterinary school, then did you, I know you loved wildlife then. Did you have an idea and an inkling that this is where you're going to be heading? Or did you say, I like small animal? Because you've opened up your practice, clearly you've been practicing. So was that like always on the back burner, like a bucket list or for
It
you?
was
What
kind of
was that
like a
like?
back burner, knowing two things. One is I had a lot to learn in dogs and cats, and the basis for exotic animal medicine and wildlife medicine back then was the dogs and cats. We knew nothing else. We extrapolated from there. We're going back to 1978. So all this body of knowledge now that's known, none of that was known back then. So I realized that A, I had to make money. I had to learn the profession. And I tell people it takes you 10 years to get from day number one, your first day of job, to get to first base. So I'd learn all those skills, especially working with people. And then the wildlife expanded as I started working in California. And the first place I worked at, the Sunsurf Animal Hospital, we took care of wildlife for free, injured wildlife for free. That was a huge, huge thing because there's a lot of wildlife there. We're in the coastal area and they burn a lot of birds. And I learned how to work with wildlife from there. Then at Long Beach Animal Hospital, I expanded that dramatically. And at Long Beach Animal Hospital, we saw back then approximately 1,000 injured wild animals per year.
Oh my gosh.
Let me hone my appetite. So after that, then I started getting better and better at it because I was actually practicing it right then and there.
Right.
So it's not something you learn so easily from vet school. That's something that takes time, especially the birds and avian medicine, that takes decades afterwards. And I give the students a kind of a fun analogy. I tell them, your first day at work, now you're a licensed veterinarian, you're dressed all spiffy. You're doing your first client, okay? You're now responsible for what goes on. You're equivalent, when you see that first client, you're equivalent to a Major League Baseball player coming to bat for the very first time. You haven't taken a pitch yet. After all those years of school, it's going to take you 10 years to get to first base, et cetera. The point is, don't worry, we're here to help you, but you're just getting started. And if you want to do the exotic animals and wildlife, it's going to take even longer. Get the dog and cats down first, and then you do better, okay?
Yeah,
I
that's fantastic.
actually practiced what I preached without realizing. It was just
Yeah.
happenstance. It was just serendipity. That's what it was, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it also explains like the power of mentorship and just shadowing and learning and being open. Just like you were talking about exchanging information back and forth like that. It's so powerful, it really is. And I love the fact, and to the listeners, you may not know this, but he is a wildlife photographer, which I love. So you're marrying these two wonderful passions that you love. So tell me a little bit about your main interests in nature and wildlife photography.
Well, to make sure people understand something in this digital world we live in, they all think about, I want to do wildlife photography. I want to be in the cover of National Geographic. And I tell them, you're not going to be ever. So get that out of your mind. And secondly, what camera lens do I buy? I tell
Yeah.
them, if you want to be a really good wildlife photographer, you need to do two things. One is be out in nature a lot. And secondly is patience. That's most important than camera lens. So you got to love being out in nature. And I do. And if I go somewhere exotic in the world, I don't get the picture of the polar bear that I want, whatever it may be, I'm happy. It's an excuse to go back. If you have that kind of attitude, you can really do good with wildlife photography. Don't try and make it a profession. There's no openings for you there, too. I do it because I want to teach people what's going on in the world. And I have it on my website and my lectures in person. I do presentations all over the world, but it's on my website with no advertising, no pop-ups, no marketing, nothing to buy. I share what's going on in the world through these trips. And I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I love that. And is there a special interest in wildlife photography, certain species that really catches your eye or?
The big predators, so the big cats, of course. I've been with most of them, but I have two more coming up. Jaguars in the Pantanal in Brazil in November. And then I have snow leopards in northern India and Nepal coming up in January. And then I'm going to probably do the pumas, the cougars down in Argentina. And that pretty much covers most all of them. So I like them. I love the primates. The
Yeah.
orangutans are just, I've been there twice to Borneo. It's just a pee your pants trip. It's a phenomenal trip because being a vet, they need help. And the babies are all orphans. Their mothers were killed for palm oil plantation trees. And so they have tons of babies. They need medical help. So once you go there, you're not going to want to leave. So
Yeah.
primates and big cats are high on my list.
Yeah. And talk to me about some of the dangers that you may have experienced along the way. I mean, I'm sure it could be a little scary where you're going. So have
You
you
know,
experienced anything?
statistically speaking, you're in more danger probably driving in the traffic we drive in every day. And the reason I say is because I almost always, on the exotic trips, meaning out of my local area, I go with licensed and highly professional guides. They do know what they're doing. But I have been charged twice. Once I was with a guide in, it's called Mount Pools National Park in Zimbabwe. The guy was fantastic. His name is Andy. He goes, "I got you today by myself." Usually honeymooners go there. He goes, "There's nobody tomorrow." Used to be a great white hunter, and now he takes people out. He goes, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I've been with a trip tracking some rhinoceros. I'm working with them a little bit in Wangi National Park in Zambia." "I want to see more lions," because we had seen lions once. He goes, "Okay." We tracked a lion. He was actually right. And we all are told, if any animal charges you in Africa, never run, because they're faster than you are. So we actually tracked a lion. It was a lioness and a cub he found. The lioness was asleep. We woke up the cub. The lioness charged us. It was a bluff charge, but we don't know that at the time. And he brings his rifle up, back up, back up, back up. I follow what he says, slowly backing up. And she's coming at us. She can go 30 meters, 30 yards in 3 seconds, he told me. And so the coolest thing was, as we're backing up, he knew I wanted to get photos. And that 3, 4, 5 seconds getting out of there, backing up, he threw me forward like a rag doll and goes, "Shoot the photo." I just, and that was it. We went back about 100 yards. It was film back then, only get 36 photos. And we're both cool as cucumbers. I had to reload the film right away. My hands were shaking like a leaf, like, "Oh my God, the lion charges." And we didn't know until she went so far. She put the brakes on, the ears came up, and he told me later, and he goes, "When the ears came up, I knew that we were okay." Otherwise, he was ready to pull the trigger, which is
Wow.
a big, big problem for him, because if he pulls that trigger, he's in a place where rhinos are poached heavily. That tells the other rangers there's a potential poacher, and they send out the army. And they found out it's him bringing a guy too close to a lioness. He could lose his license. So he was,
Oh.
he did a good job, man.
Yeah, he did a good job.
And
And tell me about some of the places you've been.
second time though was a grizzly bear charging me in Alaska. Okay. And that was a bluff charge too. And the guy was near us. The bear came in and out in 2 seconds, and that was it. Okay. So it happened so fast. So you gotta be ready. So bluff charges, no time to react. You just kind of, oh, and they're gone. So keep that in mind. So in Africa, we've been pretty much almost all throughout East Africa. Some of the hot spots, of course, are the Serengeti. And the best time to go there is you go to a place called Lake Ndutu in Tanzania sometime around February. That's when the wildebeest are born by the hundred thousands, the calves. And that brings out the big cats and the cheetahs. You get to watch them hunt right there. Another good spot in East Africa is see the gorillas in Rwanda. You can get very, very close to them. The guides are outstanding guides. They talk to the male gorilla, the silverback. They're not aggressive animals. They just look that way. But you have to time it right. He's got his troop. He's got his females and cubs. And we actually saw 2-day-old twin cubs right in front of us, right? It was just literally 10 feet away. Now, the problem with this is several fold. One is it's expensive because the government there knows they got its thing and they're really endangered. So they're trying to protect them very well. But you want to get close. And on occasion, a baby gorilla comes up next to you. You can spread a disease to them, and one of them did die, confirmed by UC Davis's primate thing, that it died from a human virus. So it's a really, really great trip, but it's hard to stay away because they're so curious and so cool.
I can imagine.
Everyone should go there once in their life because these are mountain gorillas. In zoos, you have lowland gorillas. These are the mountain gorillas, and there's just very few of them left, and it's an experience and a half, and you ought to book it way in advance. It's not cheap because they got a great thing going there too. So I recommend those in East Africa. And then if you want to go to South Africa, it's a more exclusive trip, a lot less people. You go to the Serengeti and you're going to see a whole bunch of people there. You're going to see a lot. It's hard to make it a little special. When you go to South Africa, Botswana, the country of South Africa itself, Zimbabwe, they're more on concessions. It's more private land in many areas, even though there's national parks there. And with that, you can do an awful lot more. And that's where we're doing the special photography with special things. I was with her teaching park rangers in some places, but also we work with a veterinarian's helicopter sitting rhinos for poaching, and that's a phenomenal trip. I've done it twice. That one's going to be the one you're going to go on. That's going to be in September of 2026. And you get to actually touch a rhino and add him if you want. We'll have you take a blood sample from the ear vein. Way cool. I mean, you get to, those vets there are super good. They're so friendly. They're so nice. The guys, to give you an example of their sense of humor, they're all young men. You go in these totally open vehicles. You leave early in the morning. You're out there at 6 a.m. And some mornings are pretty cool, so you have to wear some little warm jackets because you're going pretty fast in the open vehicle. And one morning, I asked the guy, and I go, "You're wearing shorts all the time. What do you do when you get cold?" He goes, "I put on two pair of shorts." They got a great sense of humor, okay? So I highly recommend, if you want the more exclusive trip, you do the Botswana, South Africa, Zambia. This time we went to Zambia, and we saw the wild dogs hunting right in front of us. Just to see a wild dog is unusual. It's kind of rare. I've seen him multiple times, but we had him running right past our vehicle, and it's on my website. It's just, I'm going to go back there because those guys, again, great sense of humor. They know what they're doing. That's their whole career. So you got to decide. East Africa for an awful lot of good stuff. For the first trip, it's probably worth it. If you're going to do that, do the gorillas in the area around Rwanda, or I'd be more exclusive and go either to South Africa, Zambia, or the country of Botswana.
And where are you going for the polar bears?
Polar bears, and I've been there several times. It's Svalbard, which is way north of Norway. It's an island kind of owned by Norway. It's 600 miles south of the North Pole. And there's two trips we've taken on boats, which are fantastic. But a couple years ago, I went on a trip where I was on a snowmobile there in April, with just two other people and the guides, and it's just unbelievable to be in the Arctic on a snowmobile when it's all sunshine. The sun never sets. It was in April. It's always sunshine. And how these guides find polar bears, and sometimes they say we stay right here. Sometimes they go, we go closer. We got some great photography because of these guides. So I've been there for that. And then I'm going to go on this October in 2 or 3 weeks. I'm going to go up to Churchill, Manitoba, not the tundra buggy trip where everybody goes on this big buggy. We're going to go north of that to a polar bear migration spot where we go with these Inuit guides walking out amongst the polar bears before Hudson Bay freezes. So that's the polar bear ones. Polar bear trip is a great trip. You just got to see the Arctic once in your life. It's just beautiful. Sun never sets. You got to have these big things on your window so you can sleep at night. Throws off your whole circadian rhythm. It's fantastic. 3 o'clock in the morning, we were going out. Okay, let's go out. We're having dinner at midnight tonight, by the way, because the bear, and you're just, but it's fantastic. It really is.
I would be like, what time is it? You know?
You are totally confused the whole time because the sun never sets. And you're doing things at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, like it's, breakfast time, or at 11 o'clock at night. One guy goes, "Okay, 10 o'clock tonight, we're going to go see this island and see these walruses." 10 o'clock, okay, and it's like it's daytime. You can't tell the difference.
Oh my gosh, it's wild.
Again,
Literally.
another place where the guides are out saying, "This is all the photo, all the filming of all the high-end photos." There's a Tom Cruise movie coming out, I guess, one in the Arctic. The company called Polar X, they're the ones that are with us. They take us around. So these guys know their stuff. And like I said, the guys in these trips, you spend the money on the Africa trips and on these polar bear trips with the guys. The cost of the trip is the guys that spend every penny you have if you have to. Because for most people, these are once in a lifetime trips, and do it right. Because in 10 years, you'll forget the price, but you won't forget the memories and the pictures. You'll do it right if you're going to do it once in a lifetime.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Another thing that you're very passionate about that I am as well is you love inspiring future veterinarians and the vet students. So tell the listeners about what you do with them.
Yeah, the teaching. So at the Long Beach Animal Hospital, through my other partner and then myself expanding upon it, we started an externship program. Senior vet students had to be seniors and in vet school, came down to the Long Beach Animal Hospital for a month. We live with the staff, live with me, whatever it was, and they came to work every day, started 8 o'clock in the morning, and they saw more clinically in 1 month rotation than they see in a whole rotation for a whole year at the school because they had busy load. And it was great because we meet at 8 o'clock in the morning doing rounds. And the first thing I'd say is, you want to earn respect from the staff. So when you walk in the door each morning, make sure you find everyone and say, "Good morning, how are you today?" We start with respect, huge amount of client communication, reading radiographs. So every day we go over cases over and over and over. And after a month, it starts sinking in. All this knowledge, which is hard to apply, we teach them how to apply it. And then they have to post on Facebook what they learned for the day. It's called the Extern Daily Diary. So it's been a tremendous experience for the students. And my staff loves it having these students. And we look back at all of us doctors and go, "Yes, we were this naive a long time ago, so we're patient with them, because it's up to them to learn, and even more nowadays." So the teaching is really what the Long Beach Animal Hospital is all about for me. It was teaching the next upcoming generation of veterinarians what to do through the externship program. And so many of them liked it so much, they stayed on as employees for years. So it was an extended job interview for both parties, which is a fantastic way to do things, yeah. And
Absolutely.
then the clients loved the fact that the students would post a Facebook Extern Daily Diary, what they learned for the day with their photo, doing something like maybe assisting in surgery or listening to a guinea pig heart with a stethoscope, and they became a part of it. So it was a bonding thing. It was a teaching example for clients and for staff, especially for the doctors, the students, to learn how to communicate with clients. So it's all about client communication. You have to have body knowledge. You have to have skill at what you're doing. You got to know how to work with the staff. But honestly, the most important thing is communicating with clients if you want to be successful in vet medicine. It's a people practice. It really is.
Oh, I love that you do that, and it's great that you start off the day with saying good morning, how are you? Creating that culture of respect is so important because it's the nucleus to everything that we do in private practice is just having that teamwork approach to care. So excellent job.
Yeah, and
And
then since one more thing on that, since I tapered down on that, now I don't work at the hospital so much anymore since I sold it. I do this at my condominium in Long Beach, I mean, sorry, in Harbor Springs, Michigan, We have like a retreat, a 5-day retreat, where basically they come and stay with me. It's a big slumber party, bonfire, spaghetti dinner thing. We go kayaking, hiking, outdoor, and we just find out what they need to do, because we know suicide rate is a problem in our profession right now. And I'm trying to help them find their niche. What's their meaning to life? It starts with listening to what they want, building trust. Then we go wherever we have to, big picture wise, critical thinking, whatever they need to know. They love doing rounds. They love reading radiographs. When we get away from that and we learn about they're going to lead stressful lives, like we all do at work every day, how do you minimize the stress? And we pick one good way, nature. How to go out in nature and how to let nature let you calm down a little bit. So when you come back, you're prepared for the stress of it. It's all about listening and learning and being a learning organization. That's what is the importance of listening. And people don't want to listen nowadays. They want to talk. Let's learn to listen. So at my conference, oh, by the way, no cell phones are allowed. They step in the bedrooms.
Oh.
But during the daytime when we're talking around in nature.
Oh, Zolo.
So, yeah, okay. It's really, they like it because they get away from that and they start bonding. Oh. And we open their minds.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about unplugging a lot at the conferences, how important it is to kind of just separate from those devices, like you're saying, decompressing and really being present. So now that's fantastic. I was just looking at these photos. Tell the listeners where we can go to look at your photos and listen to some or watch some of your, read some of your stories.
You can go on the Long Beach Animal Hospital website. That's easy. The letters are L as in long, B as in beach, A as in animal, and then H as in hospital.com. And at the top right, if you're on a computer screen, it says photography. Click on that link and you'll see photos that go back 30, 40 years with stories. It's not just, hey, look at my photo of a lion. We explain what we're doing with a lot of humor, a lot of humor in there. You know, I have a dry sense of humor. So read the captions, read the story, and people are there to learn about what it's like to go on these trips and what's going on conservation-wise for people that can't go on these trips.
Yeah.
So that's the first one. And the newest one now is called Vet Wildlife Photos, all one word, VET wildlifephotos.com, where I'm putting some of the more current stuff. For example, the Arctic teaser on there. I'm changing from the animal hospital and putting it more on its own little website, which is going to be just photography. There's so much there, people can't cover it even in their lifetimes. It's probably 20, 30,000 photos on those sites.
Right.
Stories about them. So the key is for me to share what's going on in our changing world from the conservation point of view and from the vet medicine point of view and the wildlife photography point of view for people that can't go on the trips. And many times people go, I want to go on the trip, and they come on the trip, but that's not what it's there for. Because there's no advertising, there's no marketing, no pop, there's nothing to buy, it's just information. So people should take advantage of it.
Yeah, and you're also a contributor to us here at DVM360 too. You have some articles with us.
Writing the articles on Borneo, working with the orangutans, what it's like to go in the jungle, which is just fascinating. And we got some other ones. So in the future, I'll hopefully write a few more on there too. Yeah. So on your actual link there, those are shorter ones. They're kind of like more right to the point as to what people's appetite and what's going on in the world.
Love it. And Dr. Carl, before we sign off, if you had to pick one species that you just are absolutely enamored with, only one on this earth, your answer is?
The big cats. Okay.
The cat.
We're coming up. We got the jaguars and we got the snow leopards. Yeah.
Okay.
Fascinating. The way they operate, the way they hunt, because once they fixate on something, nothing dissuades them. They're like a missile going after them. It's scary. Wow. You see them attack a prey, you go, Jesus Christ, they don't fool around, because there's no Trader Joe's to buy food at night, no 911 to call. It's this or they die, and they can't feed their people. So they don't fool around.
Unbelievable. Dr. Carl Palazzolo, thank you so much for all the great work that you've done in our profession, continue to do. Incredible work, my friend.
Okay, Adam, I'll see you in Africa. Okay.
Dad, you got it. Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate this podcast as always, as it helps us continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.